Okay, so I thought I would I'd begin this this talk by not just talking about the minutiae of our organisation, but actually trying to look first of all at the things that motivate us as an organisation, our outlook on the world. Basically, we consider that capitalism is a rotten system. It is a system that, I mean, just some of the statistics, some of the stories that you hear, I'm sure if you've been around our organization or you've been to the conference, so far, you will have your own examples of things that distress you about the way that the capitalist system works. But, the $1.5 trillion in military spending, the more than a million people killed in Iraq and so on, the fact that people who wage wars in Iraq or in Vietnam historically, wherever, they never get punished for this, the use of depleted uranium. You could think as well of, the war is very much a part and parcel of the business as usual of capitalism. You could think of the fact that in any given year, even worst case scenario, there's 1.5 times as much food produced in the world to feed the entire population, and on a good year, 9 million, a mere 9 million people actually die, stop lives end as a result of starvation and related diseases. You could think of the kind of gutter politics that predominates under capitalism. That the paries that vie for office under this system actually offer nothing for working class people other than austerity, other than the huge austerity in North America and Europe and so on, the attacks on the disabled and so on that are coming in the current budget. The only other thing that they offer is victim blaming. So the mass expulsion of the Roma, otherwise known as gypsies in Europe, all the anti-refugee racism. I mean, so many things about the capitalist system are altogether odious. So, as I'm sure will come as no surprise, our politics begin with anti-capitalism. Even though that's a little bit obvious, I think that it's worth restating because what we are trying to do is actually build an organisation which is an alternative to all the other political organisations which exist in society. And a key difference between us and the other organisations which exist in society is they are not anti-capitalist, and in fact, their sole purpose for being is to help the ruling class govern this barbaric system. I think that this is a very important distinction, of course. So what we're arguing is we need a political party in this country, and one is needed internationally as well, of course, that actually wants to defeat this system rather than to run it. And this is, of course, quite important because if you look at, for instance, the Labor Party, which is in government presently, their desire to run the capitalist system. Let's just fucking take the ministers on the Labor left. Like let's just cut to the fucking chase. The Labor left. Jenny Macklin, the Minister for Genocide, presiding over the Northern Territory intervention. You could think of Peter Garrett and Penny Wong of the Labor left. Presiding over the expansion of the uranium industry in Australia. I don't know if people saw, but the Roxby Downs uranium mine, which supplies the Fukushima plant, which now has a level eight Chernobyl-style nuclear disaster going on. Well, that's where it's here in Australia they get the uranium from. It has now flooded, and some of this toxic water is now seeping into the nearby Aboriginal community. So, cheers to them. Cheers to our comrades in the Labor left. We've now got a left-wing prime minister who's also a woman and opposes equal pay for women. You could go through this. Clearly, this party, which has not only sought to govern under capitalism but does govern under capitalism, is as appalling as any party you could imagine, and is not an avenue for making our lives better. The other major political force in Australia that a lot of people who would consider themselves left-wing actually look towards is the Greens. And I really think that any illusions that people have in the Greens only rest on the fact that they haven't yet governed in Australia, and so they can seem to be some sort of alternative. But they're of course not at all anti-capitalist. The explicit mission of the Greens is to be a party of government within 15 years. That quote comes in a particular context, which was the Greens' recent decision to back away, well, not the Greens Party ever as a whole held this position, but in New South Wales, the party is supposedly more left-wing, and it controls, it's half controls, Marrickville Council. They passed a motion for boycott, divestment and sanctions against the apartheid state of Israel. The Marrickville Council, which I think is a major trading partner of Israel, by the way, but it was quite a useful gesture to say that we actually oppose apartheid. We think that it is intolerable, the horrific plight of the Palestinians. Well, under pressure from essentially the Murdoch press, that great capitalist institution, the Greens, our council members were denounced by Bob Brown and by the party leadership and so on, and the party actually backed away from it. And the whole argument, it's absolute opportunism. We don't want to rock the boat. We want to be a party of government in 15 years. Therefore, we have to prove ourselves as, and this is the way they express, this is not my interpretation, we have to prove ourselves to be part of the moderate mainstream. We have to prove ourselves to have an indistinguishable agenda from that which is currently governing our society. So any idea that these sort of parties that aren't anti-capitalist offer any road forward is I think a bit of a joke in that context. The Greens as well praise the Liberal Democrats for going into coalition with the Conservative Party in Britain that has unleashed budget cuts of between 25% and 40% on every government department except of course defence. And they were upset that the Liberals in Tasmania didn't form a coalition government with the Greens. They said, "Oh, look in Britain, look, it's worked out so well. Why aren't the Liberal Party in Australia? We want to govern with the Liberals." Now that proposition was not controversial, as far as we can tell, among anyone in the ranks of the Greens. So we think it's quite urgent. There actually is a political organisation in Australia which actually wants to struggle against the system, not just to hold important positions of helping to run it. In terms of what informs our principles, I think it begins with an understanding of the world in class terms and with seeing that it is the working class which can break capitalism and on the one hand, and on the other hand, build a society which does not contain any of these horrors of class oppression, of racial gender oppression, of endless war and of environmental destruction. The reason why, it's worth explaining this, because it really is the foundation of everything, I think, of all of our principles, of everything that we stand for. For all of the wealth and power that the ruling class has, it has a particular weakness. And that weakness is that they rely on us. They rely on the workers of the world in a variety of ways. They rely on us to make the profits that they so covet, the profit motive. This is the key thing that drives the capitalists. They rely on us to make those profits, to produce the commodities, the goods and services from which they derive their profit. All of this comes from the labour of workers. They rely on us to keep the infrastructure of society going. They rely on us to, the electricity grid, telecommunications, transport, the distribution, selling of goods, education, health, all whole infrastructure of society is based on us. They even rely on us, on working class people, to fight their wars for them. This is all very important. Halliburton might have made a killing, to use a bad pun, in Iraq, might have got all these enormous contracts and so on. It wasn't the executives of that company sending their kids off, with assault rifles to patrol the streets of Baghdad. That didn't happen. They get working class people to do it. Now, this is all obviously horrific, but it also points to the fundamental weakness of the ruling class. The thing that is their Achilles heel is the thing that that can ultimately bring them down, which is if we, workers of the world, actually unite and refuse to participate in, refuse to cooperate with their agenda, we collectively refuse to do this. Obviously, as an individual, you achieve nothing if you just, whatever. But as a great mass of workers, we can actually bring their system to a grinding halt. But more than that, that's an incredible social power. But the other side of why we look to the working class is that the working class has the ability to bring about a society with a totally different way of operating, a totally different set of values and so on. This is very important because worker struggle is inherently a democratic one. You can't go on strike just as an individual. As I said, that's pointless. You'll just get sacked. So it has to involve some sort of democratic debate and decision-making. This is, of course, a collective process. So, you know, workers' organisations, you know, even, you know, unions and so on, goes against the whole, you know, from the word go, from the, against the agenda and the values of capitalism, which is we're supposed to compete. Supposed to, you know, compete against each other. Well, instead, when workers unite together and fight, you know, fight against the boss and so on, we do this in a collective way. All of the slogans of the labour movement, of the union movement, like the most frequently used term is solidarity. You know, slogans like an injury to one is an injury to all. This is not the individualistic logic of capitalism. This is an idea of collectivity and solidarity. Okay. And, of course, the working class does not live off the labour of anyone else. We all labour collectively. We have to labour collectively. We can't take, you know, if you work here at the university, you can't take a little bit of the university home. The same is true of large industrial enterprises and so on. We labour collectively. And actually, workers taking control of society provides the basis for a new society based on collective decision, you know, democratic decision making, collective control, you know, democratic control of the economy, and a society without exploitation, without the need, you know, to victimise minority groups, to wage war or any of these things. So understanding that the working class is the force that can challenge capitalism, challenge the ruling class, and can bring about a new society. That really is the foundation of our beliefs and so on. And it's from that insight that we derive all of our principles. I mean, our attitude to unions as an organisation, we think it really matters that we have a strong and, as you know, combative a union movement in this country. And to whatever degree we can, we try to, you know, to achieve this. You know, we have, you know, a number of members who are very active in their trade unions and so on. You know, Marx and Engels were the first political theorists of any description to support unions and to support workers' struggle on principle. I think it's important that in even a day-to-day sense, even around the smaller issues and so on, that people actually do try to organise together and so on. Our attitude to, you know, liberation struggles also come from seeing the world in class terms. You know, the issue of refugees and of racism more generally. You know, why, you know, we actually want to push back the whole, you know, agenda of, you know, victimising refugees, you know, or of, you know, victimising Indigenous people and so on. What's so important that we engage in campaigns around this is that this is a tool of the ruling class. This is something that they actually use to divide working people, to deflect anger away. So if you think that, you know, living in, you know, southeast of Melbourne or in Western Sydney or the growth corridor of, you know, southern Queensland or something, you know, there's not enough infrastructure, the public transport's crap, housing is unaffordable, you know, rather than actually, like, as if a boatload of refugees have actually made those policy decisions. But, of course, this is the agenda of the ruling class. So actually combating all of these things matter. You know, the fact that, you know, sexism and homophobia and so on actually, you know, degrade, in that case, together a majority of the working class, make people feel less confident. This is something that actually needs to be confronted. Things like, you know, the question of war as well. You know, we're anti-imperialists, you know, and there was a T-shirt during the Bush Bush Jr. years, which said, "I'm already against the next war." And, well, that kind of sums up the attitude that, you know, these wars are about working class people being sent to fight and kill each other and die and be, like, physically and emotionally scarred for the profits of those who rule our society. So we get this all these principles from that class perspective. I think the other important thing we get from that perspective as socialists is, you know, when we say that the mass of working class people must rise up, you know, en masse as a collective, set up their own organisations to run society, the important kind of philosophical underpinning of that is essentially the idea of self-activity, that no one is going to do it for you, that if people just obey orders and don't organise themselves and don't see themselves as political actors, well, the world can't change. Now, unfortunately, we're not in some position to call up a revolution, you know, and get everyone, you know, in all of the entire working class rebelling. But to whatever extent we can, we try to organise and participate in and encourage resistance and getting people actually doing something. So, for instance, you know, in something like the same-sex marriage campaign, which I want to talk about, you know, we've really, you know, pursued an argument, won an argument to have regular ongoing mass street protests, to get people together in their thousands to march through the streets, to defy homophobia, demand something of the government, rather than just, you know, say, oh, you know, me and Josh, we're just going to go, you know, try to speak to our Labour MP or write a letter or some shit. You know, we have this idea of self-activity and so on. So that this view of class struggle and seeing the world in class terms informs all of our ideas. I want to talk about why organisation is important, because we are obviously raising the question of you joining our organisation. I think that one of the reasons why it's important for our side to have its own political organisations is the other side is very well organised. I mean, that can be taken for granted. The ruling class has its own publications. It has, you know, control of the mass media. It has its own political parties, quite clearly. It has, you know, its think tanks, its university professors. It has, in addition to those sort of ideological institutions, it has institutions of physical force, known as the state, known as the police, you know, the you know, army, the court system, the prisons, all of these things which can, you know, at least potentially be used to, you know, physically repress our movement, and so on. And in some senses, even more important than all of those things, the ruling class has at its disposal people who support capitalism in leading positions of the workers' movement and the student movement and so on. That, you know, we've got, you know, the ALP, union officials, you know, the union bureaucracy and so on, the ACTU leadership, all of these people support the existence of capitalism. You know, the union officials are there essentially to negotiate between capital and labour. They're not there to abolish the system whereby capital exploits labour. And these people, they're professional political operatives. They are well-trained counter-revolutionaries. And in any given society, they are organised. And they can assume leadership over over struggles that take place in our society, therefore building a revolutionary alternative to their counter-revolutionary leadership is very, very important. I think that in history, but also in our own times, if you look to the Middle East, you can see that revolutions do occur. They will continue to occur for as long as we have to endure the capitalist system. But, you know, the victory of the working class out of these revolutions, that is far from an inevitability. And, you know, you can really see in a country like Egypt, you know, unless there is political forces that are experienced, you know, that can come together, bring together experienced activists and begin pushing forward, you know, a working class agenda and pushing for workers' power, what the fuck are the alternatives to that? We've had a glorious revolution, but what are the alternatives to having a revolutionary political party that looks to workers' power? The alternative to this is what? Fucking Al-Baradei, the Muslim Brotherhood, who never supported strikes and didn't support the revolution when it broke out. What are you looking to? As the military? What? What exactly? So it's very important that we actually have political forces in a revolutionary situation to argue the way forward to workers taking power themselves. But this does not just matter. Having a revolutionary organisation does not just matter in the context of a revolution. We need more socialists now. So even though I would argue that the victory of a revolution, you know, is dependent upon us having a revolutionary organisation, I would say that actually revolutionaries are also the best fighters for reforms. And basically because we have a strategy, as I said, to mobilise people, to actually cause a fuss in society, you know, to use workers' industrial power to whatever extent we can organise, to organise, you know, street protests, to organise more militant actions, civil disobedience if the circumstances are appropriate and so on. And we're not going to say, we're going to stick by our principles in these things. We're not going to say, oh, the Murdoch press objects, well, we better, you know, backtrack on that one, and so on. So I would argue that socialists are the best fighters for reforms. Actually, if you look through the history of Australia or any other given country, you know, what you'll find is, you know, it was, you know, socialists of one description or another, you know, who are the women who chained themselves to the government building demanding equal pay. You know, all of these, in all of these struggles, socialists play a really important role, because our concern is not how we can suck up and ingratiate ourselves in the halls of power, but actually how we can push the struggle forward, whether it's a revolution or pay rise or whatever. In terms of organisation, if you agree that capitalism sucks, I would say that you know, you should actually join an organisation that wants to prosecute that case. I mean, that's the first thing. I think that, so in that ideological sense, you should go with the people who articulate an understanding of society that actually matches your own. I think that it's important that we actually unite and collaborate with other people who feel the same way. I mean, that's not a very, very radical or insightful idea, really. If you want to achieve something, find people who feel the same way, work together, and so on. I think that what we need in Australia is a much more prominent anti-capitalist left. I think that this is one of the reasons why an organisation matters, because periodically there are things that do piss people off, and a lot of people actually have, in the back of their mind, this country's a bit racist. I don't agree with war. Why aren't they doing anything about climate change? All of these sorts of things. Whatever the grievances are. And then periodically, this finds expression in mass protests. So, the huge anti-war marches in 2007, big protests against work choices, and so on and so forth. Well, part of the problem is for people who have grievances against the system, unfortunately, in Australia, anti-capitalist politics is not very prominent. People don't know necessarily what socialism is, what the socialists say about these things. Is there any alternative to this system? So building more prominent, visible anti-capitalist left, I think really matters. We want to make anti-capitalist politics, socialist politics, much more of a frame of reference for people in this country. I think that one way of conceiving a revolutionary organisation is to see it as a network of activists. We collaborate together, which I think, for one thing, it helps break down the isolation that one can feel, detesting what's going on in the world but feeling like there's nothing that you can do about it. And actually do get to do something if you're part of an organisation. The network of activists, which actually tries to develop its members, actually tries to give people experiences, speaking at a speak out, speaking in public meetings, doing the basic activist work of handing out leaflets and talking to people about the issues of the day, and a whole range of, much broader range of skills that, when you get involved in a socialist organisation, you learn. These are skills that actually stick with you and mean that whatever the issues in your workplace, in your school, some issue that happens in society, you actually have some basis of being able to respond to them. We want to develop people to be able to lead and, maybe lead a mass revolutionary movement someday or a militant demonstration. But leading can be, important in less dramatic ways, which is to be someone who leads other people in political discussion. If actually being the political person in your school or workplace or community or whatever. And I think that being a revolutionary organisation and being engaged in political education and discussion and all of these sorts of things helps make people more confident that they can actually respond to the dominant and ridiculous ideas in society. Again, the Murdoch Press. Which most people will read. So yeah, I think that that's one of the things that we want to do. And I think we want a network of activists that can expand. And I think that one of the things that we want to convince you of is that it would be a good thing if there were more socialists. And therefore, we want to recruit you to the idea of recruiting, of actually trying to talk to other people and inspire them. That there is actually a point to changing the world, that it's possible, that there is something that you can do now. I'm actually trying to win people, the kind of a set of ideas that can make them feel confident to participate in that struggle. I wanted to talk a little bit about what our network of activists has achieved thus far. So the Equal Love campaign, the campaign for same-sex marriage, which I've already discussed a little bit. We've actually been able to build what is quite a remarkable, ongoing, year-in, year-out movement of regular mass street protests in this country. So it's quite unique in this, otherwise fairly you know, rubbish political climate that we live in Australia. So I think it's quite an achievement. And I think that it has actually seriously impacted upon Australian politics. That, you know, in the 2010 election, it was something that, it was an issue that dogged both of the political leaders of both major parties. I'm saying it dogged them, I mean, that just wanted to fucking avoid it. That actually these people are completely out of step now with, you know, the views of most people in Australia. It is an embarrassment. You know, for these politicians. So whereas, you know, John Howard could feel, yeah, you know, it's going to be another wedge issue, you know, I'll attack the gays this time, you know, I've done it to the blacks and the refugees, I'm going to introduce this ban, you know, that whole, you know, right-wing agenda. Well, when he did that, there was only 36% of people in Australia who supported same-sex marriage. And after, you know, years of campaigning, of this, you know, mass public campaign of demonstrations and so on, we now have, you know, a clear majority support for, you know, our demand for equal rights. And, you know, this is an achievement, which doesn't, you know, solely rest on the shoulders of Socialist Alternative, but in a very significant sense, you know, we've played a leadership role in this campaign. And we were the people who articulated, you know, strategy and, you know, won you know, within the campaign, within Equal Love, the idea that the way forward to win civil rights, if we look at history, is to get people on the streets and actually have this public visible campaign. I think that's a real achievement. I think that the Palestine Solidarity campaign is also quite important, that you know, Palestine solidarity activity in Australia has not been particularly strong. And I think that other than within, you know, the Muslim community, essentially, not much of the rest of there's not been other major organisation has really taken up the question of Palestine. Well, when the war on Gaza began a couple of years ago, you know, we were able to launch, you know, the Students for Palestine clubs, which, you know, were quite, you know, controversial initiative, but really quite a successful one. And, you know, it's now, you know, there's now a continuous movement in solidarity with the Palestinians, a campaign for boycott, divestments and sanctions, which should play an important role in. You know, the refugee campaign is another campaign which is sort of, it's nascent stages. It's, you know, I think it's something that's beginning to develop again after a lull. You know, people thought when Rudd got elected that, oh, that horror of the Howard years is over. Well, not so much. And, you know, in the last couple of years, it's been something that, you know, we put a real, you know, premium on. I mean, this year in a lot of our universities, we've launched, launched, you know, Refugee Action Collective or Coalition or some sort of anti-racist, different names, in different locales. But, you know, the same sort of concept that we actually want to have, you know, campaigns on the campus which take up the question of refugee rights. And I think they've had, quite some success. In terms of rank and file unionism, I mean, there's a lot that we could discuss. You know, Adam over there and Cecilia played quite an important role in the equal pay campaign that the Australian Services Union is running. Liam, who gave a talk earlier, Liam Ward, who is lectured down the road at RMIT, you know, when there was a picket on in his union, because for years it actually built what is now known in the RMIT branch of the NTU, National Tertiary Education Union, as Liam's base. You know, he built a base, you know, by being, you know, someone who has our kind of approach to trade unionism of, you know, the rank and file involvement is important, you know, and so on. You know, when they had a strike there last year, about half of the people that the RMIT branch of the NTU turned down on the picket line was for his school. And there's like 120 people working in it or something like that. So that sure goes to show, if you had a network of activists like that, you know, throughout the industry and throughout other industries, trade unionism in Australia would be a lot stronger. But already, you know, examples like that show what can be achieved. We are the only group really even a coordinated way in the student movement to the left of the Labor Party. We have you know, we participate in student union elections. Student politics would just be student if it wasn't for us. That actually we're the people who are the people who go out and talk to students about political issues and try to get a vote on the basis of supporting left-wing ideas and taking and saying that the student movement should actually campaign against the government and take up the political questions of the day. And one other example, just to get back to the issue of same-sex marriage. By and large, National Union of Students is dominated by the Labor students of one description or another. The one department that we, that a member of Social Stock, different members, but the Social Alternative is controlled or had an officer in nationally in recent years has been the queer department. Representing gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender students. And let's compare something. Well, when the Labor Party was elected in 2007, it promised us, of all things, an education revolution. And of the more than $1 billion that was taken out of the higher ed sector under the Howard government, not a single cent of that was returned to our universities. One would think that the education department, at the very least, of the National Union of Students, would object to this and would try in some way to criticise, at the very least, if not wage, some sort of campaign against the government. Well, actually, no. I've not seen seen any such campaign, and the one of the budgets, this education revolution, which gave no more funding to higher education, got was like 7 out of 10 or something like that, 8 out of 10. Awesome. So yeah, two thumbs up. If you compare that, of course, to the role that socialists have played in the queer department of the National Union of Students of making the issue of same-sex marriage quite prominent on the campuses and so on, it goes to show why having a network of activists that can, unfortunately not control the whole thing, but can at least, have that space carved out for real student activism. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about having a network of activists, an organisation that that can play that role. And in our other examples in terms of the student movement, Damien's not here, is he? No. A member of ours, Damien, last year was, the year before was the president of the Swinburne Student Union. And when Indian students were protesting against basically 3-year escalating series of violent attacks on the public transport system and elsewhere, stabbings and a whole range of things, and the government was refusing to act. The government and the police were both saying there's nothing racially motivated by walking up to someone, asking them if they're Indian, and stabbing them in the abdomen with a screwdriver. When there was a very large protest of Indian students, which we went along and showed solidarity with here in the streets of Melbourne, Damien was able to use his position there to basically say, as a president of the Swinburne Student Union, I support what the Indian students are doing. They're absolutely right to protest. The fact that a few windows were smashed doesn't matter. What about, the guy getting stabbed, for fuck's sake? And, it was quite an important act of solidarity. And it was reported in the Times of India. it's important. I think that the other major thing that we were able to achieve is to keep the genuine ideas of socialism alive as opposed to Stalinism. I think our growth has now meant that for the first time since Stalinism really cemented itself, I guess, in the 1930s, the first time the biggest organisation on the far, on the so-called socialist left is actually anti-Stalinist. I think that's important. I think that, our magazine, our website, our regular forums keep alive these ideas, and we can organise a pretty kick-ass conference. I think that if we were bigger, there's many more things that we could do. If we had a large organisation, when we would go out and say what we need is not just to elect Kevin Rudd and have a, your rights at work worth voting for campaign to win back our rights at work, we actually needed mass strikes to defeat Labor. When we went out to the huge rallies, there was no one who refused to sign that petition. That call would have been popular if it was someone other than a small organisation making it. So if we were much bigger, we could actually organise some serious industrial action that could have defeated those laws once and for all. And the same is true, of the refugee campaign, and so on. Okay, so I wanted to go through now what Socialist Alternative members do. So if you are thinking of joining, for one thing, we educate and train ourselves. This is important. We build the campaigns and struggles of the day. Not sitting around waiting for a revolution. And as I said, we try to inspire people to join us in this struggle and try to win people to socialist ideas and to win people to the idea that they themselves have a role to play in changing the world. All right, so to go through the specific, they're the kind of the aims of what we're trying to do, I suppose. I want to go through some of the specific activities to give you a bit of a feel for it. So on the one hand, we have branch meetings and public meetings. So when you join Socialist Alternative, you'll join a particular branch. you know, so if you're in Sydney, presumably the Sydney branch can, you know, the geographical side of it. In Melbourne, we actually have three branches. We can deal with that that a bit later. But basically, the branch is the really, really central thing that we do every week. It has some of the aims I talked about. So on one hand, it has an educational purpose. So every it has an educational purpose. So we discuss, questions of political theory, of history, and so on. It's where we debate and discuss the issues of the day and how socialists, you know, should respond to what's going on in Libya or whatever. It's where we discuss our work in the different campaigns and movements. So it really is quite central to how we organise ourselves and how we orient ourselves politically, as well as, you know, giving us a more general education in socialist ideas and so on. One week we have a public meeting, which advertise with posters, and on a particular advertised topic. And then the alternate week, we have a branch meeting, which is more internally focused. So it's a chance for us to evaluate how we're going as an organisation, have out any debates amongst ourselves, whatever. There are other educational activities beside branch. So, you know, reading groups, an introduction to Marxism discussion group, which we get people to do when they're newer, I suppose. We have events like Marxism. We have a website and a magazine as well, which is an important educational resource. We also don't just want to talk to ourselves. This is important. So one of the key ways of meeting people is to do information stores. We want to go out and actually campaign about the political issues of the day, we want to actually be on the lookout for people who be interested in you know, discussing the state of the world and discussing left-wing politics and so on. The thing to say about that is, it's a minority of people. If a minority of people are going to necessarily want to sign a petition that we're doing, it's probably a minority of them who, you know, are interested in figuring out, you know, how capitalism can be overthrown or whatever it is. That's the reality. But actually, that minority of people is really important. If we could recruit, 1% of the Australian population, that would really be cool. It would actually make it obviously a huge difference. So we're looking for a minority of people, but winning them over matters. Building an organisation matters. Another thing that the members of Socialist Alternative do is attend protests, both build and attend rallies and protests. So the purpose here is to show solidarity to pressure governments around the issues that of the protest, to bring people together as a collective, and to give, you know, so people actually themselves are not sitting at home, you know, feeling sad about the world, but are getting together to take a stand. And it pushes society to the left when there is this sort of struggle going on. We also go there to try to engage people in political discussions, because if people are willing to give up, you know, Friday night or Saturday afternoon or whenever it is, to actually come to a protest and take a stand against the powers that be, obviously not always, but there's a higher chance that some of these people will, you know, get what we're talking about. There is a point to actually, taking a stand. There is something wrong with the system, and we should do something about it. So we go there to engage people in political discussions as well. We also have campaign fractions. Once you've been around for a little bit, you might want to have a particular focus on a specific campaign and dedicate some more of your time to that. So we have, for instance, in Melbourne, fractions, basically group of members who dedicate their time more to one particular campaign, in addition to all the other things. So, we have one for Palestine solidarity work, same-sex marriage campaign, refugees. We have various different groups in different unions and industries, and so on. I'm probably forgetting some. We also have a requirement that people should be members of unions. So in your relevant industry, if we talk about the collective power of the working class and we support unions, it's fairly self-evident that we should, you know, not be hypocritical about that and actually join unions. As you can imagine, we're a self-funded organisation. So, people who join, there is a financial membership dues And they reflect how much you earn. We take into account whether you've got dependents and all of that sort of stuff. It's not supposed to be prohibitive, but actually any organisation in the history of the workers' movement or anything has obviously had to levy money from its members to survive. And the final thing I'd say about all of this is just generally participation. The idea that we don't have this passive, this not Greenpeace, and, you know, like we'll send you a flyer every year. Like, we actually are an active organisation, an active membership. We don't think that you can change things as an individual, but I think as part of an organisation, we can have, you know, coordinated and ongoing activism, you know, not just around one issue, but actually as a part of an organisation. We have the ability to respond to whatever the next atrocity is. You know, when they, you know, Israel murders, you know, aid activists on the Mavi Marmara, we can respond to this. We can hold protests, hold speakouts. You know, when there are riots in detention centres, you know, we can go and show solidarity with the detainees and so on. And as well, not just engage in these episodic struggles, but out of them, actually try to build something, you know, you know, that can really contribute, you know, in the future to fundamentally changing society. And actually, I think that all of you have a role to play. I think that's really quite important. You know, I think that Australian society would be a hell of a lot better off. Australian politics would be in a much better shape if there were more socialists, you know, if there was a mass socialist party that could actually campaign in every workplace and community and be visible and really take a stand on all of the issues, and not in the kind of half-assed and pathetic way that the Greens, some of the Greens might do until they're told to shut up about it. And I think that it actually matters that we commit now. I mean, we are not the mass party that we need in Australia. It actually matters that people like you and I, ordinary people, commit some of our time to laying the foundations for that now. Because if you look at the whole history of capitalism, look at any country on the map, chances are at least once in their history, including here in Australia, at least once, probably more, there have been times when mass socialist organisations of one sort or another have emerged. And if you look, and you know, I've actually played a role in shaping the history of those countries. Now, if you actually have a look at those organisations, they never fell from the sky fully formed with 50,000 members. It never happens like that. There is always a prehistory to those organisations. There's always this. Relatively small groups of people coming together. You share the same set of ideals, the same vision for the world, same, you know, set of principles and so on, getting together, collaborating and laying the foundations for you know, a bigger organisation. Now, chances are, if you come and do the store with us next week, we're not going to come back and have 500 new members after that. We're not in those sorts of times to build, you know, a mass organisation like that. But there are going to be struggles, there are going to be radicalisations to come, and out of those, we need to be prepared so we actually can, you know, when there are, you know, 50,000 students on the streets like there were in Britain, when there are, you know, mass trade union organisations, when millions of people are starting to think, I can't tolerate this system anymore, the crisis is bearing down on me, the austerity is too much, the system is too odious. When there is a mass audience for socialist ideas, or, you know, for radical ideas, we need to be going out there and trying to build a serious organisation that actually is capable of challenging the capitalist system.